Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Wednesday, October 20th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional state into part of my infallible guidance system, the same kind of infallible guidance system that every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the use of that tool has improved the quality of their lives. And we hope people do that soon and often. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to questions, comments, testimonials. And if you have any of those, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. And it'll put a question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. This is the 293rd day of the year. Today's lesson simply reads, All fear is past, and only love is here. The commentary reads, All fear is past because its source is gone, and all its thoughts gone with it. Love remains the only present state whose source is here forever and forever. Can the world seem bright and clear and safe and welcoming with all my past mistakes oppressing it and showing me distorted forms of fear? Yet in the present, love is obvious and its effects are apparent. All the world shines in reflection of love's holy light, and I perceive a world forgiven at last. Father, let not your holy world escape my sight today, nor let my ears be deaf to all the hymns of gratitude the world is singing underneath the sounds of fear. There is a real world which the present holds safe from all past mistakes, and I would see only this world before my eyes today. Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment book, Lesson 293, is titled, What They Say is Completely Irrelevant. She quotes Bobby McFerrin, who said, With a sense of real joy from the depths of your being, you open up to a place where grace can come in. Pam writes, They say you should follow the rules. They say you need 8 hours of sleep. They say you should avoid sugar, stay away from gluten. They say love hurts. They say lots of things that are only true if I decide to subscribe to them. The real question is, what do I say? What do I believe? And what do I want to be true? My money is on lesson 293. All fear is past, and only love is here. That's our Course in Miracles experiment and the Pam Grout Course in Miracles experiment commentary and our workbook lesson for today. And as usual, we've got about 50 minutes to hold conversation and discussion in our first hour today. Our second hour today will be another tape. It'll be the second hour of Getting the Stress You Need. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, you can help us make this show relevant to you. What is something that would be relevant to you today? We had our support group last night, and we listened to a Guy Finley talk, which was an extension of last week's talk. And he was talking about the same basic topic he always talks about, except that in this one, he was trying to flush out the nature of thought, to describe thought and what it's capable of and what it's not capable of. So he said things like, thought is blind. Thought has no compassion. Thought has no conscience. Thought cannot touch anything. Thought only references itself. There are not thoughts about things other than thought. And he was going very deep, and he asked people to chime in from the live audience he had and the online audience, and they created quite a list of statements about observations of thought. And thought loves conflict, and thought is always judging, and thought is labeling, and thought will trample anything except itself. No compassion in thought. There is no connection in thought to anything but itself. And when we were done with that, listening to his talk, in the discussion within our support group, one of our members was completely turned off by the Guy Finley talk and had a hard time even listening to the whole thing, almost dropped off the call, because she interpreted what he was saying as being very negative and very harsh. And another person had a very hard time with this talk, even though she generally really likes Guy Finley and his talks. But that's because she could not wrap her mind around what he was saying about thought and how if everything he said about thought is correct, then he's telling us to not think. And she just kept going around in a circle. How can you live your life if you don't think? And, of course, that's not essentially the message of his talk. One of the core messages of his talk would have been identify with your thought. He understands that as human beings, we don't really have a choice about whether or not thought is active in our minds. There's what Guy Finley calls a mechanical level of consciousness, and all it does is churn with thought. This is the nature of David Bohm's concept of sustained incoherence. We create a problem with our thoughts. We generate negative emotions. We generate judgments of the people around us. And we do all of that within the framework of thought. And then we don't like the result and we think, oh, I think I will think of a solution to this pain and suffering and problem that I'm experiencing that I created with my thought. And that counterproductive loop is what Michael Rice has written on every recent version of the 7-Step Reality Management Worksheet as the phrase sustained incoherence. And the root of it is that our conscious logical mind gets trapped in believing that the word is the thing, or my thoughts about you are the same as who you are. And because I get distorted or trapped into believing that my thoughts are accurate and my thoughts about you is the same as who you are, then when I generate a painful experience in my interaction with you, my thought tells me what's wrong with you and what you need to do to change so I don't have to feel my pain. And, of course, that just piles on more pain and frustration because rarely are you or the other people that I judge or think about willing to remake their lives in exactly the way I think they should so that I don't have to feel the upset I'm feeling. That's probably a good thing, too, because it wouldn't work anyway. Other people changing their lives is not going to change my negative emotional state. Only the interpretation that I place on things has the capacity to change my emotional state. So one of our members was listening to this and thinking, well, Guy Finley is telling us not to think. And I tried to help her understand that it's not thinking that is the problem. It's not understanding that my thoughts operate on a different level, that my thoughts are not the same as the world around me and the people I interact with. That's what creates the problem. Not my thoughts, but my misunderstanding my thoughts or my identifying with my thoughts. Well, a few years ago it came to me to say, my new definition for being stuck is anytime I have a negative thought or a negative emotional experience active in my mind, that's an indication that I'm stuck. My new definition for being hopelessly stuck is when I'm arguing for my negative thought or negative emotion. I have every right to be angry, etc. I know that you're wrong here. I know that I'm right here. And when I have that knowing that's accompanied with pain or fear or sadness or righteous indignation, the actuality is, while I might have certain aspects of the situation accurate in my mind or certain facts down, if I'm in pain, I'm in error. I'm wrong or my thoughts are in error if I'm in a negative thought pattern or I have a negative emotional state. And this didn't really help that person in the group. However, that person in the group just happens to be very creative. And so it came to me to say to her that there is another level of interacting with our world that we do all the time. We're just not as trained in it and we're not as aware of it. But it is that intuitive, creative, you know, emotional, insight-oriented approach to life. And she has a thing that she does that she talks about on a regular basis, which is she will just take a breath and a picture will come into her mind, fully formed picture, and then she will just start drawing and try to make what shows up on the paper look like the picture that showed up in her mind. Now, the picture that shows up in her mind does not come from her conscious, logical mind's thought process. It just floods in. It's like an insight, an intuition, a creative burst. An aha experience, etc. So my offering to her was that she is routinely interacting with the world from a process that's at least more loosely connected to thought, if not devoid of thought. And that's the kind of thing that Guy Finley is trying to get us to open up to, the potential that the in-the-moment direct experience of life, ourselves and others, is far more valuable and often accurate than our thoughts about it or the words we come up with to try and communicate it to someone else. So that was a real eye-opener for her. And it just, she kept saying, it never occurred to me that I could use that creative process anywhere else in my life other than just the drawings that I do. And so we started talking about how that throwing myself open to the moment, asking to be taught by life, asking a series of questions, and then trusting that whatever unfolds from that is going to be just fine, is one of the things that took my work to the next level a lot of years ago now, probably 17 or 18 years ago, and I was in a Dr. Michael Rice lecture. He had come to town. And it was probably the second time I had seen him give a presentation. And he asked everybody in the audience, there were over 50 people in the audience, and he asked us to think about some of the worst things that have ever happened in our lives. And, of course, everybody started groaning. And he said, don't worry about it. We're not going to ask you. There's not true confessions. We're not going to have you relive it. But just think about some of the worst things that have happened in your life. And then he said, now pick just one that's more than 5 years old and focus on that for a minute. And then raise your hand if you can see how, directly or indirectly, that event that when it happened you thought was a catastrophe and tragic and disgusting, how that event that's more than 5 years or more in the past has led directly or indirectly to some of the best things in your life today. And in that moment, every hand in the audience went up, including mine. But what happened in that moment, I still don't have good words for it. I've talked about it for years now as there was like an explosion in my head. There was a full body knowing. There was a shiver down my spine, whatever you want to say. And I just kept repeating from that, I don't want to wait 5 years. I don't want to wait 5 years. I don't want to wait 5 years. And I really didn't even know what that meant or what to do with it. A couple days later, I woke up with a full-blown realization that I need to start practicing when I get up in the morning, and I've been doing it for years now, and I start with adding energy to the part of my mind that can watch my own responses, and I start looking for the earliest warning sign that I've gone to a negative thought or a negative emotion. And as soon as I realize I'm having a negative response to what's unfolding in my life, I call a timeout, take that calming breath I know how to take, turn the focus inside, and start asking myself a series of questions. They can change day to day, time to time, but they're all along the theme of, I wonder how this is going to work out better than I could have planned. I wonder how this is going to turn into a blessing. I wonder how this holds the lesson I need to learn to move to the next level. I wonder how this is going to introduce me to people and situations that are going to take my life to the next level that wouldn't have happened without this. This isn't anything that happens in my day that goes in a direction opposite of what I want. As soon as I realize I'm contracting against it or feeling a judgment about it or being negative in my emotional response, I call a timeout for myself, take a breath or two or three, turn the focus inside and start asking these questions. The reason for it came in this full-blown, deep sense of realization that if even the most horrible, tragic, painful, life-disruptive things that happened in my life eventually led to some of the best things in my life, even if I never would have planned for them and I wouldn't wish them on my worst enemy, then it made sense to me, just a full-body realization, that that must also be true for the little things that don't go the way I want them to. Getting stuck in traffic, or spilling coffee grounds, or stubbing my toe, or dropping a $2,000 computer and having it break. And so I began that practice. And within a few years, it was gaining momentum so that people actually started to comment that I was different, and they wondered how, in heaven's name, I could stay so calm in this situation or that situation or that situation. And about that time that people started noticing it and making open comments to me, somebody introduced me to Rainer Maria Rilke, the poet. And he has a segment from, you know, Letters to a Companion or a Poet or whatever, where he talks about how important it is for us to learn to live in the question without demanding answers. Because in the moment when we can ask a really good question, the mind that can ask that question is simply not capable of understanding the answer. And I began to realize, oh my gosh, that's what I've been doing. Triggered by a negative emotional response, I have begun to teach myself to live in the question. And I'm not searching for how is this a good thing and how is this going to turn out for the better. I'm taking a breath or two, sitting back and observing from that calm observer position and just gently opening myself to observe how are things going to work out better than I could have imagined, despite the fact that they just went in pretty much an opposite direction of what I had wanted. And I noticed two really powerful things happen within a year or two's time of practicing that. The first one is because I'm looking increasingly for the earliest warning signs of any negative thought and any upset, And then I call a timeout for myself and turn the focus inside and do the calming breath. The first result is I spend the tiniest fraction of my life these days experiencing the negative emotions compared to what I did prior to this exercise. Prior to this exercise, I was living into the definition of being hopelessly stuck, because when I would have a negative thought or emotion, I would argue for it. I would use that intellectual capacity at whatever level I had it to prove to myself that I'm right and the other person's wrong, or life is wrong for this having happened. And I would pour my intellectual prowess into developing the evidence and the logic that demonstrates how I'm right and the world or the situation or the other person was wrong. But once I began that practice, as soon as I realized I was in a negative spin, I would call a timeout, take a few deep breaths, and calm myself down, step away from the thought process I was using to create the negative emotion, and engage my thought process in this gentle, open questioning. Oh, I wonder. And this is exactly what the 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership asks us to do. Adopt the position of wonder and ask wonder questions. That's the only way to grow in self-awareness and commit to live into the commitment of being curious. So the first difference it made in my life was I noticed I was spending a tiny fraction of my life in time experiencing the negative emotions. The next thing I noticed was I began to see connections, synergies, little miracles all over the place that I never saw before. My hunch is they were always there. But when I was in the tight, contracted, I know I'm right and the world's wrong, or you're wrong and you should never have said that or done that, and when I was in that crushed down, I know I'm right, arguing for my position kind of status, I was not open to see all of the potential connections and all of the ways that life could unfold better, differently at least, and better than I had planned. Because I was raised in this Western society where we're supposed to plan things out, control our environment, control our behaviors, control other people, etc. And I began to see wonderful, I would call them miraculous at times, luck, coincidence, miracles, whatever you want to call them, all over the place. And they would be there in the same moment as life was unfolding in a way that I didn't want it to. And it would go everything from a slight delay in traffic that, you know, my first response is, oh, brother, don't these people know how to drive? Or, listen, I got to get to work. And then three or four blocks later, I would see, oh, there's a bad accident there. And probably, if I hadn't been stopped in traffic, I would have been right there at the time of the accident. Another one that just popped into my head was I was going on a date, and there was an evening cruise, an evening dinner cruise that goes out in Chicago and looks at the skyline at night, and it's just this, you know, lovely, beautiful weather day. And I purchased the tickets, and I went and picked up my date, and I left 3 hours for us to be down there early and walk around downtown area and then show up at the boat. And it's the kind of situation where when you buy those tickets, there's never a refund. You're either there on time and you get to be on the boat, or you've lost your money. There's no rain check. There's no refund. And so I picked her up 3 hours early. The map said it should take me an hour, maybe an hour and a half to get there. We had 3 hours to do travel time, and we get on the expressway, and it's a parking lot. So she's getting all bent out of shape, and I'm just using the time to let's get to know each other, tell me about your grown children, et cetera, and we're doing all this wonderful conversation until she gets distracted and starts looking at the clock, and then she's starting to wring her hands, and we're going to lose, we're not going to go there. I said, well, you know, tell me about your grandkids. And we engaged in conversation for a while, and then she started doing that, marveling, how can you stay so calm? All that money, I know what these things cost. We're going to lose that money. I said, well, just relax, enjoy the time. And then eventually she started looking for, how about if we get off and then we can take the train in, we'll do a park and ride. And well, eventually I pulled off, and instead of heading into Chicago, because I realized there was no way we're going to make it in time. And I had this openness of, well, I wonder, you know, what we should do with this to turn this date into a wonderful experience. And I got this flash of a restaurant that was nowhere near where we were going, but it wasn't that far off the route from where I got off of the expressway, and it was in my old stomping grounds, and it was a beautiful family-owned Italian restaurant. So I said, well, I wonder if I can find that, and started driving. I found it. We didn't have reservations. We showed up. It was fine. It was a fabulous, relaxed, gourmet Italian dinner. This was long before smartphones, and she was moved to take a picture of the dessert that was so beautifully prepared, and she, you know, called her daughters and talked about the wonderful, and she just kept saying, I can't believe you aren't bent out of shape about the loss of money, the not going on the cruise, how did you think of this restaurant? That was just one of the many things that have unfolded in my life since I began this practice. And it began with getting up in the morning and reminding myself that today I want to catch the earliest warning sign that I'm getting frustrated or resistant or pouring thoughts into a negative thought or pouring energy into a negative thought or feeling a negative emotion. And I want to call a timeout for myself, take a few deep breaths, and start settling into these gentle, open questions. Later on, Rilke gave me the phrase, living in the question. Well, that is essentially what the recommendation was for this creative person last night who couldn't make sense of Guy Finley's talk, and she couldn't wrap her mind around how we could live without thought. How could we get anything done without thought? Well, it isn't so much that we get things done without thought. It's that we get things done in a very different flow when we don't identify with thought, when we don't argue for the rightness of thought, when we take life as it comes and ask to be shown in the moment what's ours to do. Or what could we learn from this? Or what might be unfolding in front of me that has nothing to do with the way I planned the day? And countless little things, whether it's spilling coffee or getting delayed in traffic or showing up at a store to buy something and I've called the store and they said, yes, we have it, and I get there and they don't have it. And instead of fuming and frustrating about how they wasted my time, I take a breath and I say, okay, well, I wonder why I'm here. Maybe I'm here to greet somebody. Maybe I'm here to delay me from being someplace else that wouldn't have been good for me to go. Maybe I'm here to make a discovery down an aisle in the store I never would have gone in. And I just open myself to that and go with the flow as life is unfolding. And all I can tell you is it has improved my life in ways that words can't describe. I just give those two examples of how I spend much less of my time in the negative emotional states because I catch them and shift out of them and go into that open questioning space. And the other one is I see so much more of the synchronicity that Jung talked about. I see so many more of these wonderful little coincidences and miracles and connections between me and other people than I ever did when I was arguing for my being right and the way the world was unfolding today as being wrong. So that was the encouragement for this very creative person in our group last night, is to just use that same process that she uses when she wants to sit down and draw, where she lets the image come to her, and then she just works to try and make that a reality and letting the artistic juices flow, letting her skills flow out on the paper. So, living in the question, asking to be shown how this is working out for my best, even though I don't know how this might turn into a lesson that I need to learn, how this might turn into a blessing, even though it's the opposite of what I had planned for the day. So, that's my offering for today before we get into any more books and readings. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we've got about 20 minutes left to entertain your comments or your questions about anything that we've already talked about today or we've discussed in the past 10 years. How can we support you today? How is what I'm offering landing with you? 563-999-3581. Alternatively, you can send me an email, tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@yagain.org, whyagain.org. Area code 917. You're in the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Dr. Tim. It's Camille Morgan in Florida.
Camille, we haven't heard your voice in a while. How are you?
I'm hanging in here. Yes, I've moved. I've been through a lot, and my ability to tune in on the weekdays is improving, so here I am.
Wonderful. How can we support you today?
Well, I did miss your intro, so I'm not sure of the subject you opened for this call, but I've had something on my mind, and I thought your insights might help me deal with it.
I'd be happy to help if I can.
I know you are good at it. I recently had a diagnosis of needing cataract surgery, and when I went for the exam, the doctor told me I'm at the first stages of macular degeneration. Well, I dealt with the anxious response in my body at the moment, but now I have to deal with the fact that I don't have the symptoms. They say, well, you know, are you affected by glare? Can you see when you drive? I can see perfectly night or day when I drive. I don't feel like I have cloudiness over my vision. They gave me a bottle of supplements that had AREDS on it, which stands for age-related eye disease. Well, that turned me off too. So I'm taking them. Monitoring my use of the computer and the cell phone, which they say is damaging to your eyes. The light is damaging to your eyes. But I am almost being forced to go to this cataract surgery by my sons and their determination that if I don't have cataract surgery, I will have macular degeneration and go blind. So I have all these outside influences that don't particularly jive with my inside confidence that I'm doing okay.
Well, in this work, the question that I would ask first is, that's a statement of facts so far, and what is your emotional response to that?
Well, in the office during the exam, I felt fairly confident of what I was seeing and how I was responding to the, wasn't the doctor, it was some assistant. And yet when she came in the room and I guess deciphered the readings, my first response was, I just felt a visible contraction in the gut. I mean, not visible, a tangible tightening up.
Okay, so
like a defense.
You know, the,
like
the EFT tapping and breathing and worksheets around that tension would be one thing to do. The next thing is you were talking about, at the end of your presentation, you said that you feel like you're being forced by your sons to do something. And so I'm asking, what emotions are you generating in response to this interpretation that you're being forced by your sons to do something you don't want to do?
What emotions am I generating to, do I understand you properly, to have created that reality I'm having with them?
No, not to have created the reality. You have created the reality, and it looks in part like this comment. My sons are trying to force me to do something I don't want to do. That's your internal experience. It may or may not be close to the actuality, but when you pour your mind energy into this, my sons are trying to force me to do something I don't want to do, what emotion do you generate?
I think the first thing would be anger.
Okay. Then I would do the worksheets on that anger.
Okay.
And I would highlight for your edification and perhaps enjoyment, perhaps consternation, that is a completely subjective response based on the interpretation you've created. You could also generate an entirely different range of emotions. Here's how. Here's just one of the countless different examples. You could throw the interpretation on this set of life events that says, oh my gosh, I feel such warmth and love. I'm caressed by the universe. I'm here with my own offspring, their adult offspring, and they care about me. And they want to support me. And they want me to be around long. But just think, if you had those thoughts completely independent about whether or not their suggestions aligned with yours or were opposite yours, if you just thought about how fortunate I am to have my own offspring be adults and be intelligent and be caring enough to tell me their opinion and to have it be something about wanting me to see well and be able to function independently and to be around longer, then I would generate something other than anger, wouldn't I?
Indeed.
But since you generated the anger, please do the worksheet that would line out, it's me, Camille, I'm feeling anger, here's the situation, my sons are trying to force me to do something I don't want to do, the thought I'm using to create the anger is they're trying to force me to do what I don't want to do, or they don't respect me, or whatever. Do those worksheets and see what you can dismantle in the energy that you've carried with you into this moment that has that anger in it.
Just a brand new perspective. I really like it. I totally, totally like it.
And then if you want, after you've done that, after you've done a series of those emotions, if you wanted, you could start trying on what would it feel like if I poured my mind energy into the interpretation that I am so fortunate to have adult offspring that care about me. And see what that brings up. That might also bring up some emotions that could benefit from a worksheet.
Yeah, I can see that.
You might also have with the same situation, you might have emotions like hurt that they're not respecting me, or confusion about, you know, how could these intelligent people not see things the way I am? I don't understand why they're trying to force me to do this. And so there's, you know, three different emotions you could do worksheets on related to this same situation.
Right. Yes, and I'm getting a glimpse of how my focus on the doctor's diagnosis really misdirected me in the work that I need to do, because I can see how working on my emotions with my son's attitudes and considerations for me are really the foundation of giving me a more confident interaction with this doctor.
Well, it's just coming back to the basics with this work. If I have a negative thought about myself or somebody else or a negative emotion, I can instantly know three things. The first one is it's a lie or based in a falsehood. The next thing is it's an old tape playing. It's not about the current situation with the doctor or my eyes or my son. And the last thing is if I take an action from it rather than using the tools I know how to use to dismantle those negative thoughts or emotions first, and I act from the negative thoughts or emotions, I'm just going to make my current situation worse, not better. I cannot improve my current situation by pouring negative emotional energy into it.
I know that's true. I'm ready to do the work. I appreciate your insight so much, Dr. Tim.
Well, you're quite welcome and deserving. Is there anything else we can help you with today?
Well, I think that'll be as much as I can handle.
All right. Blessings. Thank you for the call.
Thanks.
So we've got about 10 minutes left if we need them. Otherwise, I can start the second half of the show today, because that's, again, it's another taped, it's a replay of the Getting the Stress You Need talk, seminar, workshop that Dr. Michael Rice does. And we played the first hour yesterday. We'll play the second hour today. But we do have 10 more minutes if people want to raise a question, make a comment, share an observation. 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can talk for a little bit before we transition to the second hour of our show. If all goes according to plan, tomorrow Michael and Jeannie will be back for their second hour to do it live. So feel free to get your comments or questions ready for that. And let me know how I can support you for the next 8 or 9 minutes here. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we'll have a conversation, or we'll just start part 2 of getting the stress you need. All right, I will just remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. I'll be back tomorrow.
In our intermission in the workshop, we had a question that came out from someone in the audience, and I'd like to address that question so that those who are watching the video might have a little more clarity if this question comes up for you, and that is, what's the difference between an intention and a goal? You know, just really refining the difference. And I would offer that the goal is the intention that we have elevated to the point where we decide we want to make it behavior. So I might have a whole myriad of intentions, things I'd like to do, things I want to do. At some point, I'm going to convert one of those to action. I'm going to put my commitment behind it. Use an example. I decide that on my vacation next year, I'm going to travel. And gee, let's see, I'd love to travel to Greece. So I have the intention to go to Greece. I would love to go to Japan, maybe Africa. France has always been of interest to me. So now I have 4 different intentions, 4 possible places that I'm going to go. So they'd be in the realm of intention. I haven't decided to take action on any of them yet. But 2 months from now, when I get my final dates back on when my vacation time is going to be, when I'm going to travel, I'm going to have to convert one of those intentions to a goal. I'm going to have to say, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. And that's where the conversion takes place from intention to goal. And once you do that, your mind will produce the best evidence possible to achieve that goal. If you ever asked yourself the question, you know, why did I do that? Or why do I do that over and over again? And it's against your own will and choice. It's because you hold a goal in your mind. And you've got to look at and change that goal. If you've done the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, you'll remember in step 6 of the worksheet process, the reality management process, you identify the goal that you're holding. And then when you go to number 9, you get rid of the goal. That's the core step in forgiveness. In the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shebag, and it literally translates to cancel. And what it's got to do with is canceling goals. Because your mind always gives you output to back up the goal that you're holding. And if the goal is unconscious, if you don't pay attention to the goal, then you become behavior. You do behavior that you say, I don't know why I did that, and I wish I hadn't. You can't have a behavior without a reality. You can't have a reality without a goal. And reality is the output of your mind. It's unique and individual to you at every moment of your life. And your goals determine your reality. Now go back to this man named Jesus 2,000 years ago. And again, let's look at, was he talking about here's how life works or theology? He said, be in this world, but not of it. What was he saying? He was saying, don't allow life to trigger goals in you that drive your behavior. Or life, people out there will be taking over your life. So you're in this world, you're here, you're in full expression and full experience of life, but life doesn't determine what you do. You're the one that's in charge of that sequence we talked about of intention, goal, which filter set, perception, which filter set, and the output of your mind that determines what your behavior is. If you don't determine your goals, someone else will determine them for you. And we are taught in this culture to turn it over to whoever. We are taught as children, turn it over to mom, to dad, to teacher, to religious leader, to government leader, and we go from one to another, and we think that that person sets our goals for us. Well, you know, they set a goal and I had to do it. Well, when we get into the process by which goals are managed, we'll see that no one can set your goals for you but you. Someone else can frame a goal. We're going to go through several steps in how goals are set forward. And someone else can frame a goal for you, but nobody can set it. If you can't distinguish between framing and setting a goal, if you don't know the difference between framing and setting a goal, then you'll think when someone else frames it for you that you have to do it. There's this unconscious setting of it, but you have to set the goal. And of course, the person who doesn't just go along with the crowd is the person who doesn't automatically set their goals according to the latest, you know, authority figure in the crowd. That's the person who becomes, they're called the rebel. What is the rebel doing? The rebel says, excuse me, I'm going to set my own goals, thank you very much. There's a cute poster with a line drawing of several thousand sheep walking or going over a cliff. And in the middle of the crowd is one sheep that's going in the other direction saying, excusez-moi, going the opposite way. And the people who usually take charge of their own minds by managing their goals. The mind cannot be directly managed. It is indirectly managed through our goals. And the person who does that is usually thought of as the person who doesn't follow the crowd. Once you recognize that the setting of the goal is an internal process, it's up to you to determine what your reality will be, what your feelings will be, what your chemistry will be, and what your behavior will be. I was in Atlanta last year doing a workshop, and I had a young lady that came up to me at the intermission in the workshop, and she said, Michael, I want to thank you for saving my life. I said, really? How is that? She said, well, last year when you were here, I went through the whole series of workshops that you did. And I really did the worksheet process. I really worked with the tools that you presented. I did every workshop. And about 3 months ago, I went home, went into my apartment, locked my door, and there was a man in my apartment with a knife. And he had the knife at my throat and said he was going to kill me. And she said, I had no doubt he was serious, and he was intending to proceed with that act. And she said, I was just terrified. And then all of a sudden she said, I don't know why, but something clicked inside of me, and I could hear you saying, the filter to set is love. And she said, I started to move in that direction. I started to think about that. And as I did, I looked at this man and I looked in his face, and she said, I could see the terror that he was experiencing. And she said, the minute that I was able to see that terror, she said, all of a sudden, I don't know what happened, but she said, I was just flooded with compassion. What happened? She said, a filter. The chemistry in her body changed. She said, I was just flooded with compassion. All of a sudden, it wasn't about me being killed anymore. I could see the terror in the pain in his eyes. And she said, the instant that happened, he dropped his knife and ran out of my apartment. Totally changed the circumstance. We have a lot more to say about what happens in our lives than we're led to believe. And the filters that are set in our minds and who manages our minds make a major difference in how life unfolds. We oftentimes don't see the behaviors that we do that produce the results that happen in our lives. They're kind of invisible to us. They're transparent to us. And as you take charge of managing your own mind, you'll find there's a major difference in the way that your life goes. So we see that we live in a culture where, the bosses want to set our goals, parents want to set our goals, employees, clients, lots of people want to take charge of and run our minds. You take a look at advertising, and what is advertising geared to do? Advertising is geared to set a goal in your mind. The advertiser wants to run your mind. And if your mind is open and that goal is set in your mind, you may not realize why the next time you walk into the store, you just happen to walk over and pick up this particular brand. But it was a goal that was unconsciously set in your mind that when you walk into the store is triggered by the presence of that product and you buy. Guard the portals of the mind, the Greeks said. They did have that piece of the puzzle very well in place. They had a very good understanding of that. And if you allow others to frame your goals And you unconsciously, not knowing the difference between framing and setting a goal, you unconsciously set the goal. What will happen is you'll do behavior. Anybody here ever feel powerless? You'll feel powerless. Because it seems like your behavior is at their beck and call. This is the seed and the root of most resentment. When we feel powerless, we resent the person who we say is running our life. But in fact, they're not running our lives at all. All they've done is frame a goal for us. If we've never taken charge of setting our goals ourselves, then it seems they run our behaviors. And we're controlled by someone else. We're controlled because we turn our power over instead of taking charge. And so those feelings of helplessness and powerlessness and resentment come about as a result of our refusal to be responsible for the output of our own minds. And so every behavior that you have ever done comes from holding a goal in your mind. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look into an exercise that does a mass canceling of goals. A thing about this human mind is that it never lets go of anything. It doesn't know how on its own. It can't do it. You've got to train it. There's an interesting little piece of information that comes from India. In India, monkey meat used to be a delicacy. And the way they would trap monkeys is they'd take a coconut and they'd cut a very small hole in the coconut. They'd take out the coconut meat and put food in the coconut that was attractive to the monkeys. They'd attach the coconut to a tree. The monkey would come along, stick its hand in the hole. The hole was just big enough for the monkey to get its hand in. It would grab the food. It's trapped. This monkey body, monkey mind, doesn't know how to let go, even if it's going to cause its death. If you've ever said to yourself, why am I doing this again? What's going on? I thought I said I was never going to do that again. Well, you can say I'm never going to do that again until the cows come home, but if the unconscious goal to do that behavior remains in your mind and is never forgiven, is never canceled, then every time that goal is triggered into activity, you'll do that behavior and you'll go, oh, why am I doing this again? I'm doing it again because I'm not in charge of or in touch with what's going on in my own mind. And this mind does not know how to change itself. There are only two ways to get rid of a goal once it's set. The mind never forgets. One way to get rid of the goal is to achieve it. Once you've satisfied the goal, it's finished. The second way is to cancel it. But if you set a goal and you don't purposely cancel it and never achieve it, that goal will always be there to drive your behavior. Anybody here ever find yourself engaging in what you might consider or observe someone doing childish behavior? You say, oh, why am I so childish at times? Or, you know, something just comes over me. There's this person that when I'm around them, all of a sudden I do things I don't normally do. What happened? Or this person in your life who acts, they've got goals from childhood that have never been canceled and never been achieved. And so if they're in an environment like a person who maybe reminds them of dad, and they've got an uncanceled goal about dad, that goal is activated, and all of a sudden they're behaving just like they did when they were three with that goal held in their minds. And so it becomes imperative to go back and clean up all of our old goals. Because every goal that you hold is a stressor in your mind. Remember the definition of stress, the difference between the way I want it to be and the way it is, or the way I see it. So as long as I hold goals in my mind that cannot be achieved at the moment and are not canceled, I'm under stress. I've had salesmen, this workshop is kind of an outtake of our Laws of Living course. It's a 14-day intensive that we do at Heartland. In our Laws of Living course, we teach these principles along with a whole other set in the Laws of Living process. This is kind of a subset of the Laws of Living course. And we had a salesman there a couple of years ago who was a high producer kind of salesman, always out there on the road and doing it. And we did the exercise that we're about to do, And after the next day, he came back to me. He's like, I just had the first night's sleep, decent night's sleep, that I can remember in my life. Oh, really? How was that? He said, well, I can see how all of these goals were continuously running me. The type A personality has a million goals continuously running and doesn't know how to get rid of them. If you go back and listen to the master, he talked about goal setting. Of course, it doesn't look like it in the translations we usually see, but what we're told is, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. What does that mean? Well, in the Aramaic language, the word evil is an idiomatic word for unfinished or unripened or incomplete. You would take a piece of fruit that isn't ripe and you'd say it's evil. So an evil in that context would be the equivalent of a goal. Sufficient for the day are the unaccomplished goals of that day. What Jesus was telling people how to do 2,000 years ago was how to manage their stresses. And what he was saying is, if you can't do it in the next 24 hours, take it off your list. Because what you've got is a useless stress. And if you add goal to goal to goal to goal to goal to goal that you cannot achieve in the next 24 hours, you use your resources. Why do we have so many people who suffer? One of the most common comments or ailments that you'll find if you talk to the medical doctors that you know is that of chronic fatigue. Why are people chronically fatigued? Because they're carrying a million unachieved goals that they don't even know they're carrying. And now we have the chemistry of stress happening in the structure. It's an error to set a goal for a time period longer than the next 24 hours. And so when you start to manage your mind, you start to manage your stresses. Carrying 1,000 unachieved goals would be like, well, let's imagine that we have a logging truck. And this logging truck is set to deliver tractor trailer loads of logs. So the tractor trailer, or pardon me, the truck itself is sitting in the logging yard, and an order comes in for a load of logs for next week. Well, you hook up the load of logs to the truck, and he could go, but he can't go till next week. And tomorrow morning we get an order for 3 more tractor trailer loads of logs. So we hook 3 more trailer loads of logs onto the truck. And then the next morning we get an order for another 5 for 2 weeks from now. And we hook 5 more tractor trailer loads. How many tractor trailer loads do you suppose you can hook behind that truck before that truck isn't moving? All of its resources are used. Would you run your business like that if you were the trucker? Would you hook your next 10 weeks of orders to the truck and try to haul them around to every stop you've got to make on your way? No, of course not. If you've got one to do for today or two to do, well, you'd hook two up, you'd drop off number one and you'd drop off number two and you'd be finished. And you'd have lots of resources, lots of power available from the truck to haul that load. But if you hook up the next 10 weeks' deliveries, your truck isn't going anywhere. If you hook up goal after goal after goal and don't manage that, then you've just utilized. I see you just striking yourself in the forehead like, oh, I see, I got it, okay. Why are we in overload? Because we're carrying those stressors. The mind is attempting to achieve and direct you to produce that result, and it just consumes the resources. You want to clear out everything that you can't achieve in the next 24 hours, and what you'll find is freshness. What you'll find is a new level of power because you're not loaded down and stressed carrying those goals. So what I'm going to ask you to do now, and if you're at home listening to this video, we'll just ask you to get into a quiet, comfortable position. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Why do we suggest you close your eyes? Well, there's an interesting piece of information that came to me via an ophthalmologist friend of mine. And he's really studied how the brain functions in terms of the visual system. And he tells in his one of his workshops, this fellow's name is Wayne Farr, and he tells in one of his workshops how the number of estimated molecules in the universe is 10 to the 800th power. Pardon me, 10 to the 100th power. That's the estimated number of molecules in the known universe. And the possible connections in a single human brain are 10 to the 800th power. And 80% of that is visual. So when you remember Jesus said, go into the closet and close the door? What was he saying? Get quiet, close your eyes. Shut down the visual stimulator, and your mind gets to quiet down because those links aren't continuously being stimulated. So I'm going to invite you to get into that quiet place. Allow yourself to just take a couple of deep breaths. And as you take those deep breaths, if there's any stress, any pain anywhere in your body, go to that space of love in your mind. Practice. This is a discipline to practice holding the space of love. Go to that space. Take a deep breath into the tension area and just let it soften and let it go. If there's pain in that tension place, pain has a message for you. Be receptive to its message. Breathe into it, let it soften, and let it go. And I'm going to ask you now to start to review in your mind goals that you've perhaps held over the whole period of your life. And we're going to start out by asking you to go back to your relationship with your mother. One of the first basic relationships. We lived inside of her energy system, experienced the molecules of her body flowing through our system, the emotions, the thoughts, the feelings, very intimately linked. The genetic structure for mom contains a lot of goals that perhaps have managed your life for you. Some of them perhaps constructive and useful, some of them perhaps not so constructive. So I'm going to invite you now to think about your mother in that relationship and see if you hold any unachieved or uncanceled goals in regard to mom. Allow yourself to take a deep breath, and in the ancient Aramaic language, the master teacher taught about an actual elemental force that existed inside of us that would break off the effects of errors if we enlisted its help. To deny it was to leave us in that error. And so throughout this exercise, and throughout your life if you choose to, you might invite that power to go to work in you. Ask it to become active on a new level in you, in assisting and showing you and surfacing any hidden goals in regard to mother. And as those goals surface, I'm going to invite you to just cancel them. And these would be goals from any time in your life. Maybe you were 3 and you wanted to comfort mom because she was crying. I want to fix it for her. You need to cancel the goal to fix it for her. I want to please her, or maybe a goal to displease her. And as you breathe, breathe deeply. Let any goals in regard to mom come to the surface and let them go. Now, in letting them go, and the way you let them go, and it's a practice, it's a discipline. If your monkey body, monkey mind has been used to holding on to your goals, you know, it's kind of like the fingers might be a little bit tight around it. You know, we've all done that parlor game of squeezing a broomstick for 2 minutes as tight as we can and then, try to open the fingers and they don't open. Well, some of your mental, emotional, and spiritual muscles might be a little locked on some of these goals, and so the practice will be opening the fingers. And as you practice with it, it will become easier and easier to let go of goals, to cancel them. And as you do that, it will strengthen one of the spiritual faculties that we'll talk about a little later in the workshop, and that is the spiritual faculty of will. So as you breathe and let go of any goals in regard to mom, and ask that power, enlist its support in letting go of these goals, And if it's appropriate for you, I'd invite you to set the goal now that that power be available to you to continue this undoing process, to undoing these stressors in your life that we're going to talk about that you'll uncover, or perhaps some that you're not ready to uncover yet, but that you enlist the ongoing support of that power that in Aramaic was called Ruach HaKodesh, an actual elemental force in our minds that will go to work for us and assist us. And now shift to your relationship with your father, another very deep and primary relationship in every one of our lives. Are there any goals in your mind that you hold in regard to father that have never been achieved nor canceled? Ask that power to assist you in surfacing any hidden goals, any unconscious goals. If you notice any tensions in your body, that might be where those goals are stored. Take your breath to those tensions, let them soften, and let them go. Think of now each of your siblings. Are there any goals in your mind that you hold in regard to any of your siblings? I want to be better than them. I want to fix it for them. I want to take care of them. I want them to take care of me. I want them to accept me. I don't want to accept them. Any goals of any kind or quality in regard to siblings, brothers, sisters? Go through them each one by one. And ask that power inside of you to uncover and show you any goals that you might hold that have never been achieved nor canceled. And now think about yourself for a moment. Are there any goals in your mind that you hold about yourself or have held at any time in your life that have never been achieved nor canceled? Did you want to be the star? Did you want to be out of the limelight? Did you want to be the best or the worst? Did you want to disrupt or fix? Any goals in regard to self? And this act of canceling goals is a mental act that comes from the spiritual self. The ability to cancel a goal is a faculty of the will. If the will has not yet been strengthened and activated, this might seem a difficult process at first. And the practice, you know, it's kind of like you go into the exercise room, the weightlifting room, and you lift weights and you strengthen your muscles. Well, this strengthens the spiritual muscle of will as you cancel goals. Any goals in regard to self that need to be canceled? Any goals in your mind in regard to achievement? Anything at any time in your life that you wanted to achieve but perhaps didn't, that perhaps still resides in you as a goal? Allow yourself to take a breath and look at those thoughts around achievement. Oh, I want to look good. I want my hair to be perfect. Oh, to be acceptable, my clothes need to be exactly this way or that. If I don't have this or do this or do that, achieve this, I won't be acceptable. If you hold a goal that would come from a thought like that, then what you'll find is that you'll always have to be doing something to be acceptable, and acceptance will never be felt. As you cancel that goal and accept yourself, all of a sudden it's like, oh, acceptance is natural. That's what life is about. Take a deep breath and let any goals in regard to achievement go. Any goals in your mind in regard to school or education from any time in your life? Perhaps a goal to be the A student. Perhaps a goal to achieve some award or reward in school that never quite came off. Perhaps the goal to get a degree that maybe you have never gotten. Cancel that goal. And you might say, well, but gee, you know, I still think I would like to get that degree. Fine. Then as you cancel it, move it over into the area of plans. I plan to get a degree. And at the appropriate time, set the goals that will support you achieving that plan. But don't set the goal to get the degree. Have a plan to get the degree and manage your mind so that the proper stressors occur at the proper time to produce the behavior that will be achieved, finally, as getting a degree. So that would look like, well, let's see, I'm going to put in my daily planner that in June, I'm going to get the application papers to start in September and take those three classes that I need to get. So in your planner, it's now a plan, it's not a goal, on June the 1st, you mark down, and this is what I'm going to do. Now come June the 1st, you get up in the morning. Is the plan to get the degree still there? Yes, it sure is. And is it appropriate for you to go to school in September? Yes, it sure is. Then fine. Now you take this plan, this intention, and you elevate it to a goal. Today, I pick up the phone, I call, and I get the papers I need and fill them out and send them in for applying for school. So you do things in an orderly fashion that create manageable stresses, and stresses at appropriate times. Are there any goals in your mind in regard to church? The goal never to go, the goal always to go, the goal to please the religious leader or displease them? Any goals in regard to church? Now, of course, that has to do with the structure of what people set up. Now let's go to the next level. Are there any goals in your mind in regard to God? You know, did you have a goal when you were four in your life? You were told about prayer, and you held a goal for God to fix something in life that perhaps wasn't your place or business to fix? Is that goal perhaps created resentment because it didn't unfold the way that you wanted it to? If you notice with any of these questions that your breath tends to stop, the breath is a switch for mind energy. I'm going to invite you to keep your breath open, keep your breath moving. And as you keep your breath open and moving, you'll be more in touch with those unconscious goals. Any goals in regard to friends? You know, look back in your early childhood. Any friends that you had goals about? Oh, I want to be part of that group of friends. Or I want to keep this person out of my group of friends. I want to please this friend. Or I did something to displease another friend. Oh, I wish I hadn't done that. A goal. Cancel it. And breathe deeply. Go back in your memory bank to your childhood. Are there any goals that you hold in your mind that have never been achieved nor canceled in regard to neighbors? Any goals at all in regard to neighbors? You know, think about the people on each side of you where you lived, the people across the street. Were there ever any goals that you held that have never been achieved nor canceled in regard to them? Breathe deeply, soften, and let them go. Any goals in regard to jobs? Jobs that you've either had or not had. Any goals that you hold in regard to careers that need to be canceled? I need to make this much money. I want to go to this place on the corporate ladder. You look at the number of people who hold that as a primary goal, and they love their families, but they've never set goals regarding their families. So the goals that drive their behavior keep them at work 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. And when the family confronts them, they say, but I love you and I want to support you and nurture you and care for you. And they're wonderful intentions. But if those things are never elevated to goals, they never enter into behavior. And the active goals, I've got to achieve the corporate ladder, run this person's life. Mind management is a key. Any goals in regard to relationships in your life? People that you've had relationships with that have been intimate relationships, close friendships, spouses, lovers. Any goals that you hold in any of those relationships? Oftentimes, the childhood goal of wanting to be close to someone, if it's never achieved nor canceled, can be running someone's life 20, 30 years later. I've seen more than one person who was promiscuous, and once they uncovered, when they finally looked at it and uncovered it, what they found was that it was a childhood goal to be close and intimate with someone that was still running their lives and driving this behavior that they couldn't seem to control that led to promiscuity. Once they cleared that goal, that was the end of it. Any goals in regard to your body? The way it looks, the way it feels, its size, its shape, its weight? Any goals that have never been achieved nor canceled? It would be an error to set the goal to lose 20 pounds. Why? Because you also hold a goal in your mind, you've been trained throughout your whole life, that if you lose something, you're going to go find it and maybe get some extra. And so to set that goal can be the thing that, well, we force ourselves to take off the weight, but then go and put additional on because that goal to find what we've lost. Oh, what do I want to do? Well, I have a plan to achieve my ideal weight. All right, that's a great plan. It's not a goal. Don't make it a goal, or you'll be overloaded. And now what you do is you set out on a daily basis. Remember, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. Sufficient for the next 24 hours is the setting of the goals that will help you to achieve your plan. So you set your goals accordingly. Ah, today I'm going to go out and run. Today I'm going to eat this way. Today I'm going to think that way. Today I'm going to forgive the things that bring about the need to protect myself, which oftentimes is one of the goals that underlies weight. So you set your goals in an appropriate time frame where they're achievable, and you cancel the rest. Any goals in your life about managing your behavior? Any goals in your life about your emotions? Oh, I don't ever want to react like that again. Well, to say to yourself, I don't ever want to react like that again, is to set a goal to react like that again. Cancel that goal. What do you want to do? Oh, I'll set the goal for the next 24 hours that if that emotion comes up, what I'll do is I'll breathe through it, I'll forgive, and choose to stay in the love filters, to stay in Rachma and Kubba. There's a great saying in the 12-step programs, one day at a time. They knew exactly what it took. Don't set it for more than 24 hours or you'll be overloaded with stress. Any goals in regard to travel that have never been achieved nor canceled? Gee, when I was a kid, I had this goal to go travel Europe. Is that still a nagging burden in the back of the mind? Cancel the goal. Let go of it. Get rid of the stress. And in an appropriate time frame, go travel Europe. Set the goal as appropriate. Do the steps that are necessary, and you'll achieve the result. Now let's just do a couple of pieces of work around looking at emotional states. If you've ever, say for instance, found yourself in a fit of anger and said to yourself afterward, I don't know why I did that, or I don't want to do that again, you need to be aware that a fit of anger is the result of a goal. And so I'm going to invite you for a moment to just pick a specific situation in your life where perhaps you've been angry and would rather not have been. And now ask yourself to be shown, ask that you be shown what the goal was that produced that behavior of anger. What was the goal that you held in your mind, that your mind produced a behavior-driving reality called anger? Breathe deeply, soften into it, and cancel that goal. Think of a time when perhaps you've been in fear and wish you hadn't. The mind produces fear because there's a goal. And if fear takes over and the mind of love disappears, and you just enter into a mind that's going to tend to make mistakes. Well, but gee, it was reasonable for me to want to survive. Okay, I agree, it's reasonable to want to survive. But if you hold the goal so powerfully about survival that it triggers fear in you, you just lost the mind of love. And you're going to frustrate your attempts to survive. So you'd cancel the goal to survive. Well, gee, Michael, that seems backward. Yes, it may seem backward, but if it's a stressor that takes you into the mind of fear, remember the first law was keep Rachma and Kubba, keep the loves set in your mind. Perfect love is what will cast out the fear. what will eradicate the energies and the realities of fear, and therefore the results in your life that are produced by fear. Breathe deeply and let that goal go. And I'll invite you to continue this process of looking for, searching for, and canceling goals that you've held from any time in your life as we close this meditative exercise and move on to the state of, or to looking at another tool for managing the mind. So I'm going to invite you to just kind of come back up to a wide awake state, fully conscious, fully alert, fully aware. You're with us. Take a deep breath. And we're going to kind of shift gears now from that quieter space and look at another tool. And the tool is called Mind Goal Management. We've handed a worksheet to those that are in our audience here, and there'll be one coming up on your screen. And we'll invite you to look at that. I'm going to just read the top part of it. So that those who are watching on the screen, if it's not too easily readable, will have it available. Managing goals involves much more than keeping and completing a to-do list. A to-do list isn't a goals management process. If you're doing to-do lists and think you're managing goals, you're probably overloaded with stress. There are actually five things that you can do with the goal management faculty that you have. And that faculty is the faculty of will. So it's more than keeping and completing a to-do list. We have literally thousands of goals in our minds that we've been trained to unconsciously set goals all the time. The purpose of this worksheet is to bring the process of managing our minds through the management of goals to a conscious level. It is a format for framing, setting, and canceling goals, three of the five capabilities of the human will. The other two capabilities of will, which are strengthened by practice throughout the day, are the ability to select a goal for immediate attention and maintain a goal. Each of these five capacities is as important as the others in fully exercising and developing your will. In our goal-oriented society, which does not put much emphasis on canceling goals, the canceling of goals each evening is imperative and leaves the mind free of stresses of the world while sleeping. Giving yourself at least 5 minutes to silently focus on love and breathing after goal canceling and in the morning before setting your goals are ideal ways to begin and end your day. So we're going to suggest some goals that you might set on a daily basis. And this worksheet becomes a format for developing the faculties of will. So the spiritual faculties, the one we're going to talk about here is will, are strengthened by doing these five items. That is, that we can frame a goal. And we spoke earlier about that. Oftentimes, the advertisers want to frame your goal. Most everybody in your life wants to run your life. They want to frame your goals. But that's all somebody external to you can do, is frame them. And you can practice framing goals for yourself. You can select a goal for immediate attention. You can maintain a goal. In other words, it's the faculty of will that decides which goal you're going to achieve right now, which goal you're going to go for. And you can maintain that goal throughout the day so that it creates motivation and drives your behavior, actually sets realities up that inspire you to move in a certain direction. So that's the ability to maintain a goal. You can set a goal. In other words, and we'll look at that setting process in a few minutes, once you've framed a goal, the framing of the goal is not the setting of the goal. The framing of the goal does not bring it into action in your mind. It's the setting of the goal, the choice to say, yes, this is what I'm going to do, is what brings the goal into the behavior
cycle in the mind. And then the last, but certainly not the least, probably the one that's most missing in our culture, is to cancel a goal. Probably the most important one for most people to practice is the ability to remove from the mind a goal at will. And most people can't do it at will because they've never met will. They haven't practiced strengthening this spiritual faculty. So as you utilize this sheet, it provides a format. And you'll notice that that you've got a copy on the front and on the back, so you could fill one out. You could do a goal sheet right now if you would like. And then you've got one to make copies of for the for future use. And so the starting point, we'll look at an evening process. The starting point on this worksheet process happens in any given evening where you start to use the sheet. And you look at all of the conscious and unconscious unachieved goals from the day. So that's the first thing I do. I've canceled all of those goals. So I want to run through. What were the goals that I held in my mind from yesterday? I'm going to cancel. I'm going to let loose of those goals. So that's the first step. So I'm creating a clear slate. It's kind of like that example I used of the truck and the logs attached to it. What am I doing? I'm unhooking every trailer from the truck so that the power is free. It's open. It's there. Second step, we're going to suggest that you integrate this as a part of your daily routine and daily practices. I give myself time for inspirational reading. That you take some space to really key into the high thinkers, the high spiritual beings that have brought teachings to us. And if you take time each day to do that, what you'll do is you will teach your mind how to set into action realities that are consistent with higher and higher ways of behaving. And of course, the check boxes are there, if that makes sense to you, to check it off. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. And then I give myself 5 minutes to focus on love and connected breathing. How does that look? Well, earlier we did that love exchange. We're suggesting you do it twice a day. So here you are. It's the evening time. You're ready for sleep. You're going to get quiet. You're going to close your eyes and go inside, if this is a goal you choose to set. And you're going to go to that love exchange, and you're going to really strengthen the condition of love in you. And you just focus on that and stay in a quiet space with the closet closed. You don't go into the closet and close the door, Jesus said. Close your eyes, get quiet, go inside, and just let yourself focus on love. And then connected breathing is a very powerful tool. We do a workshop called Still Point Breathing in our intensives. And if you look at someone who's in a state of pain and turmoil, they shut down, they suppress themselves by holding the breath. And so connected breathing is a way to open things up. And so 5 minutes of connected breathing, and a connected breath is a breath where the in-breath and the out-breath flow as a unit, and it sounds like this. A deep breath that goes deep into your system. So 5 minutes of that. And then the detailed framing of a goal for tomorrow, and you'll see there are room for 4 goals in each section. So what is it that I want to do? I now see. And what you want to do when you're setting the what, that is the first segment there, is you want to look at what's the end result you want to produce. The result you want to produce. What do you want it to look like? Okay? So let's imagine that I've got a desire to have a wonderful meal. So what would the end result be? Well, what I'm going to visualize, the what that I'm going to do, and this is a way to inspire the mind in the direction of producing the result, rather than focusing on the work, is I'm going to see myself sitting at the table enjoying this delectable meal. That's the what. Okay? And then the why. What I love about having achieved this result. And you'll notice you're going to speak it as though it's achieved. You want to see the end from the beginning, right at the start. So what I love about having achieved this result is that I've had this wonderful culinary experience that nurtures me. That's what I love about it. And I'm in appreciation for the wonderful food that I'm given that nurtures my body and feeds every cell. How? I'm going to accomplish my chosen result by taking this action. Well, what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to go to the refrigerator. I'm going to get out the items that I need. I'm going to chop and prep. I'm going to cook. And so I'll go through now. Here's your to-do list. But you'll notice the to-do list is just one little segment of the whole process. Most people think their goals are the to-do list. That's not it. It's a much more conscious process when you're fully engaged in it. So how am I going to accomplish it? When? I want to set a time frame so my mind can produce the behavior-driving realities needed to achieve it in an appropriate time frame. And what you'll find is, as you get really keyed into setting your goals, really putting them in place and framing them appropriately and clearly, is that there'll be a level of support that comes to you to produce those results that just seems miraculous. You'll have resources that show up to assist you in producing those results. And the clearer you are with each step, the stronger the vibration, the energy will be that you set up to attract support for producing those results in your life. So when am I going to do it? And now, okay, so this is in the evening just before you go to bed. Now you're going to ask assistance of that inner power. So Rukha's named here. Rukha means the eternal forces from God. And so there's a specific one for human beings. And I'm going to ask for support. So I asked Rukha to assist me during sleep and having clarity and giving me feedback on achieving the goals I've framed. Now you'll notice to this point, you've only framed your goals. You haven't set anything. So you're going to go to bed with no stresses. You cleared the goals from yesterday. You're going to go to bed, have a total clear night's sleep, and you'll have all of the resources available to clarify you and give you feedback on this goal. Then, each morning, as you get up in the morning, you're going to work towards setting, checking, and committing to your goals. So, once again, I give myself time for inspirational reading. Yep, I want to do that. I give myself 5 minutes to focus on love and connected breathing. Yes, I'm going to do that. Each intention carried out by each goal is connected to love. Now here you've got a space for all four goals. So you want to check out and make sure you're keyed into love with this goal. And that way your mind's going to be at its highest and best. This goal is both in accord with my primary and secondary purpose. And our primary and secondary purpose is another workshop that we do called Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment. But just be aware, if you haven't done that workshop, that you want to make sure that your goals are on purpose. When they're on purpose, you align your power. When you align your power, and this comes from our workshop called Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment, you align all levels of your energy and you become like a laser. Your power becomes fully available. I like this goal. I want to be real clear that having slept on it all night, I like it. You know, you've heard the saying, you know, let them sleep on it. It gives time to think about it. I now commit with emotion to setting this goal. So I'm really going to key in, yep, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to put some emotion behind it. I visualize with emotion the achievement of this goal. I see myself actually producing the result. I have framed and now set the goal. So here's where you elevate it. I have framed and now set the goal to manage my goals for tomorrow. Okay, so you're now setting a goal to do tomorrow's work. So that tonight you're going to be motivated to do this sheet again. And have I been successful at doing that? Unsuccessful? Or did I cancel the goal? I ask Rukha to incline me to be and do whatever it takes to assist me in having clarity about achieving my goals. And then you've got a results space there. Results and feedback. Was I successful on goal 1, 2, 3, and 4? Did I cancel it? Did I return it to plans? And note, make a note as to how it feels to be successful. Become conscious of the level of feeling if you are unsuccessful at doing it. And be aware of the tensions that are created in setting the goals. And you'll take over your life. Thank you.